This podcast is part of the Big Heads Media Podcast Network. Go to bigheadsmedia.com for more great podcasts.
Hello, and welcome to episode 40 of Cooking with Grief, a comedy show where we bring you interesting facts, weird tidbits, and things to scare your neighbors and co-workers with when they never asked you why. I'm Chris, and as ever, I'm joined by my co-host, Chris.
The tidbit's my favourite.
That's so creepy.
I mean, hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Still well. We ask each other how we are every single episode, and
we've yet to say anything. Like, if you said, you know, like, all right, Chris, how are you?
Really struggling this week.
She left me. Again.
All right, come on, when he's down. as mentioned, we are the podcast about weird and wonderful facts. So each episode, me and Chris have each found two facts each. We've not shared them with each other yet, so we both find out for the first time at the same time you do. And with that, on to you, Chris, for your first topic.
Okay, so for my first topic, I'm going to come to a recurring theme on our podcast, because we love dubious science, from building cinemas for cuttlefish to getting dolphins high on LSD and giving them handjobs. I mean, we talk about that. It's not like something we did as a day out, you know, it's a topic we covered. So I'll stop asking you, Chris, if you could conduct a scientific study on anything, is there anything that you particularly want funding for?
I'd like to know what it is that meatloaf won't do for love. Like, that's yet to be answered by science. Or just why every red light, you know, when you're driving, every traffic light seems to be red, like directly in proportion to how late you're running. Like, when you're early, everything's green, you get there on time. When you're running late, red.
So you sort of want to work out the scientific karma.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, that's fair enough. Well, speculative science is nothing new. As long as there's been humans, there's also been the ability to spend money researching the weird minutiae of the world. And for my first topic, I want to talk about a guy called Heinrich Agrippa, a 15th century German polymath, physician, theologian, and occult writer. I mean, that makes my CV look shit.
Yeah. So just on that note, I do like, I was about to say I missed the days as if I was there, but like, you know, like nowadays, you have to be like, so, you know, you go to school and then you drop down to like, you do like, choose 10 GCSEs, give or take. Then you choose like 4 A-levels and then you choose one degree topic. And then if you want to like be considered like an expert, you have to do like a master's, PhD, which in ever smaller areas. Whereas back in the day, people were like, yeah, so I'm a doctor who's also a physicist, who's also a biologist, who's also a magician.
Yeah. Like, because polymaths, like, you know, it's too specific these days, like you say. So it's like, you know, the equivalent would be like if someone was like a football star, an astronaut, a world leader,
yeah,
and like an academic as well.
Yeah.
So he was skeptical about religion, this Agrippa fella, and he conducted experiments to sort of mock the idea of holy water. He theorized that if a priest could make water holy through a ritual, would the water become normal again if that priest sinned enough to become excommunicated? Which is a good thought for the 15th century. It's like, you follow the logic.
I'm on board with this experiment.
A lack of test subject priests led him instead to create, or to try and experiment with creating unholy water by inverting the rites of priesthood. Now, bear with me a bit here. Right.
Now it's getting dubious. I mean, yes, before I was following his logic, but now that he's trying to make...
Yeah, okay, so I think his theory is, like, a priest, you know, once someone's a priest, they can create holy water. If he creates an anti-priest, they'll be able to create unholy water. It's dubious science, but we'll
go with it.
Yeah, and there may be ritual wards. So the correct way to do the rites of priesthood starts with a candidate promising to perform the duties of priesthood, as in, you know, what their job description is, and obeying his religious superiors. Then they lie before the altar while the assembly kneels and sings the litany of the saints. I look this up. I'm not a practicing Catholic. And then there's some prayers and whatnot, and they give them swanky new robes. I mean, broad strokes.
Yeah.
So what this guy did was the inversion of the rites of priesthood. So he found ordinary people off the street, dressed them up as priests, then stripped them, said some blasphemous prayers, get them to denounce their religious superiors, and slag off the duties of the priesthood.
When? Sorry, just to stop you there. When you say found random people on the street, because let's be honest, in, was it 15th century?
Germany.
Yeah. I imagine being viciously anti-priest as an ordinary person will probably get you, like, strung up somewhere.
Okay, maybe he...
So, no, just, it does sound a bit like he's kidnapped some people, dressed them up, shouted blasphemous things at them, and stripped them down.
Well, if that's the case, it's going to get a lot worse. Because after all that, for good measure, he also chucked in some fermented grapes as a sort of mockery of the body of Christ. Unleavened bread, I guess, for the, whatever.
That's the same reason.
Yep. And just some masturbation, you know, for science, as a countenance to priestly celibacy. Yeah. So, if we're adding kidnapping to his litany of scientific charges, then there's also some wanking.
Wanking, yeah.
I was just going to try to think of a sciencey sounding phrase, but...
Is there any situation that isn't made more awkward by masturbation?
Put in this podcast right now. So, in his mind... This is the process through which he's created anti-priests who can then bless water to make unholy water. It's hardly the most scientific of methods, but I thought it was fun that he was, you know, people were trying weird stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's no rigorous method. It wasn't published in a journal. I mean, it was published in his diaries, but...
Not exactly peer-reviewed.
No.
What were his findings? Can you...
I mean,
at this stage, I've forgotten what he's even trying to prove. I don't want to prove a thing about the holy water and then it being me, but at this stage, I can't remember.
Shine a light on the mockery, like how stupid the idea of holy water was, I think. Which begs the question, let's say he's successful in making unholy water.
Yeah.
You combine that with genuine holy water.
What do you get?
Regular water.
Or bomb.
It was the cold war shenanigans of his time.
Yeah. What part of me wants to know is... I wish he'd had a chance to, is find a priest who'd made some holy water and then just sort of tear him down to the point where he, like, you know, he just has enough. Yeah, he just has enough of it. Says, fuck you to the Pope, storms off, and then everyone just, the holy water suddenly becomes unholy. I wanted
to see.
Do you
think it turns sparkling?
Oh, yeah.
Just to me, that is unholy water.
I accidentally did that as a training course every day, and there were two bottles of water. One had a gold lid, one had a silver lid, and a... That was the only difference between the two. They were otherwise identical, and I picked the wrong one and ended up with a glass of sparkling water.
It's the worst thing.
I had to drink it because, you know, to save fate. I couldn't act like I didn't want it, so I had to just, yeah, terrible.
Yeah, someone at my work, they went for the break, and they just bought a bottle of sparkling water.
Fire them.
I might. But nothing to go with it, no cordial, nothing. Like, no. All the choice of perfectly adequate drinks.
Yeah, I'd rather have unholy water.
I'd rather be dead. So that's the end of my first topic. Chris, what have you got for your first one?
Okay, well, I think we've actually spoke about this before, but what's the laziest sort of, the longest you've gone without, like, leaving the house, you know, so you've just been really lazy and not bothered to do much?
I think 3 days is probably the most.
Oh, wow.
And after that, you just get so stir crazy.
Mm-hmm.
If I go 3 days without going to the gym, I'll start to...
Crack up.
Yeah. How about you? Just I've got comparative levels of laziness.
Yeah, I think I've gone like a whole weekend without leaving the flat before. But I say you just end up going a bit
I think a bit mad. The key difference is if you shower and like put different clothes on, if you like pyjamas all weekend,
then I've never done.
It's just you feel gross.
Yeah. I have done the thing where I've, you know, been in my PJs all day, showered just to put new PJs on and got back into bed. Well, we'd both be very shit salamanders. I mean,
that's true for a number of reasons.
Yeah, amongst other reasons. But yeah, so salamanders, as in the amphibious creatures, live underwater. There's a particular type of them called an olm or a proteus, which is like a subset of salamander. And
also a rank in the Roman army.
Good to know.
Proteus, not salamander. Oh.
I was going to say, I don't think these particular amphibians hold that rank. But,
right. Playing the long game.
Well, indeed they do. Because they live in complete darkness underwater in caves. You know, they're like blind, like pale skin, you know, that typical look of underwater creatures.
Mm.
But They basically don't move much at all. And scientists in Herzegovina were studying a colony of them. And they found one individual that didn't move at all for 7 years. And yet somehow wasn't dead.
Ah, that was going to be my first question. Going.
Yeah.
Did they spend 7 years looking at a dead salamander?
Right. Oh, shit. We wasted a lot of time.
7 years. We poke it with a stick or something. Oh, fuck. She left me again.
Again? Yeah, apparently they don't need to move much anyway. And in general, they live their entire lives without moving more than about 10 meters from where they're born. And they don't have any predators in this cave. Mm. They're apparently quite hardy creatures. They don't even need to eat much. They can go without food for over a year. They just basically exist. And they mate once every 12 and a half years. And that's the only time they really move around much. They do eat small crustaceans, such as shrimp, snails, and insects. But imagine how shit you'd have to be eaten by a creature that doesn't even bother moving. Like, you literally have to swim into its mouth.
If they're that lazy, you probably got to chew for it. Just dash yourself against the teeth.
What's funny is the fact that they used the team, because they obviously had to swim down. The scientists had to swim down these caves to find the creatures and whatnot. They used the capture, mark, recapture technique to keep tabs on individual homes' movements over 8 years. But like capture, tag, recapture type thing is like, they're not moving. That has to be the... Oh, look, there it is. It's still there. 7 years later.
Yeah, because I think they use it for like elephants and stuff.
Yeah.
They roam, you know, hundreds of miles a day. Yeah. If you've got lizards that don't move at all.
Yeah, it's just... Yeah. It's just like label it capture, recapture rocks. Like, it's still there. I just find it mad that there's like that animals that can go for years without eating.
Mm.
And stuff. And apparently they live for like a century or something. They live for, because I mean, at that pace of life, you'd kind of have to make it worth it.
I mean, I find it really interesting whenever animals don't have any natural predators, how they completely deviate from normally what the rest of their animal group is famous for. So obviously, like birds, flight, you know, swiftness.
Yeah.
Anytime you've got birds that are, you know, on islands that don't have any predators.
Yeah.
They get fatter. They don't fly.
Yeah.
They walk. They're super friendly because they're never used to anything attacking them.
Mm-hmm.
Most lizards, you think of skittish, probably catching flies all day, eating little and often.
Mm-hmm.
And that's completely...
Not like these.
Yeah.
They just get to chill. But then have you seen like when a creature that normally does have predators somehow ends up in a place where they don't anymore? So it's like, you know, like pythons, Burmese pythons. A load of those escaped in Florida. I don't know how much of this is an urban legend, but like one of the reasons I saw was there was a exotic pet shop and it got blown apart in a hurricane and like some escaped.
Mm.
But basically, it turns out that Burmese pythons are pretty much perfectly suited to the Florida swamps in the Everglades. Like, there's loads of food, there's loads of tall grass to hide in, loads of water to like. It's literally perfect for them. And whereas in like Southeast Asia, I don't know what. Hunts pythons or whatever, but there are other animals that keep their numbers in check. Mm. And in Florida, they've just there's
not
nothing.
Alligators.
That's the only thing. But even then, they sometimes manage to kill like young alligators and stuff like that. And apparently, they wiped out loads of other creatures in the Everglades. They're just one day walking around, knowing like, oh, we don't have to worry about snakes. And everyone's just like, holy shit, there's these giant snakes everywhere.
Yeah.
And then you have to introduce mongoose.
Yeah, what a weird hierarchy that is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just going up the chain until you get to little weird mongoose fella.
Yeah, can't beat the mongoose.
Alpha animal. What kills monkeys? Mongooses.
Don't know. Mon airplanes.
We got one!
Okay, Chris, and now for your second topic.
Do you think you would get on alright in a commune? Any sort of communal living space?
What do you mean by
commune? So like, you've got your place of living and I don't know how well you know your neighbours, but probably not super well in the whole building.
Yeah.
Imagine if everything was communal, everyone in this building shared amenities, everything like that.
Do you think I'd hate it.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, I'm a solitary creature. I like my, there's a reason why I live in a one bed flat. I live on my own. I don't want to share with people. I used to live, in a house share. And I mean, people I live with are great. But there's always just that thing where like, I just like my own space. Like, I like my bit to be like I come home, shut the door, and like, this is my time.
Yeah.
This is my
this is area. Mimosa time.
Especially like mimosa. But also, like, yeah, I just like things to be like, because I was a lot tidier than the people I used to live with, so I was always just like...
Everything must always be tidy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. Well, you might not get along with what I'm going to be describing my second topic, which is a town in Alaska that's comprised of a single building.
Oh.
The town of Whittier has a population of 200, all of whom live inside a 14-story former army barracks built in 1956.
Right. It sounds like something from Fallout.
Yeah. Isn't it like sort of dystopian? But the complex, they live in it because conditions are so harsh outside. It sort of makes more sense to do it this way. But it has a police station, a health clinic, a church, a laundrette, and a school. And
all in one tower.
Yeah. So it's
oh wow.
It's not like I don't know where I was going with that. It's 14 stories, but it's not like a skyscraper and it's tall and thin. It's more...
Oh, okay.
It's a complex of connected buildings, I guess. But it even has an indoor playground because it's too cold in the winter to even step outside. So, you know, the kids have got, you know, looking sand and swings in one of the rooms. And because there's so few people and they all got to rely on each other, it's a really close community. You get the police by knocking on the chief's door, you know, his apartment door. Teachers come around to the students' flats and go for a homework on the kitchen table. And it's only accessible by a 3-mile-long tunnel through a mountain. So you travel through the tunnel to get to...
This sounds remote.
Yeah, it's super, super remote. So obviously, if there's like big medical emergencies, they can get them out or bring a doctor in. But like day to day, you know, like they'll, you know, everyone pays a little bit to go and get supplies as and when they need it. But it's, I don't know, a completely different way of living than...
So is it like sort of separate to... Well, I mean, like, are they sort of removed? You know, like...
society almost.
Yes.
I know I don't know the sort of legal technicalities. I'm sure they could enforce, like, you know, taxes and stuff on them. But I think because it's so remote, it's sort of almost not worth bothering with. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like such an insular little community that...
Yeah, because it does seem kind of pointless. Like, say you had, like, the normal way.
Yeah, you're evicted. Well, I'm fucking 400 miles from anything.
Yeah, and like, so the normal way in life is, you know, like, have a job, and that would be registered with, I don't know, in America, I guess it'd be registered with the state or whatever, and then, like, you pay taxes, and that in turn gives you, like, rights to certain things and whatnot. But it seems kind of like, it would be a lot of fun to try and register, and, like, presumably your job's just...
Whatever needs doing.
Yeah, rather than actually being a... Presumably, they don't have comedy podcast writers. It's probably fairly low down on the.
You know, like, okay, we've got, you know, rooms for two new guests. You know, what we need experience like electricians, plumbers, teachers, anything like that. We can sort of look up some facts and sort of half remember them and try and sort of make jokes about it along the way.
It's like, do you even have the internet here? No. Okay, we're done.
Fuck it. We'll do it live. But the interesting thing, well, hopefully it's all interesting so far, but they used to live in a different building.
It's the idea of them, like, we lived in one building, but it burned down.
Well, sort of. So, not burned down, but... So they lived in a similar building.
Yeah.
The building was called Buchner or Buchner, I don't know. But by committee, they voted to abandon it after age and structural damages made it too costly to keep repairing. So it was like, the one they live in now is 1956, built in 1956. The one before was much, much older.
Okay.
And it was sort of formed apart at the seams and, you know, there's only so much they can do without sort of major investment.
Yeah.
So they looked for another abandoned army barracks and decided to move to that one. They just left the old town behind, but obviously they took the food and the sort of medical supplies with them, but they... You know, like you said, Fallout style. The old town is vacant except for its sort of shop fronts and abandoned rooms.
And super mutants.
It's inhabited by bears.
Oh, wow.
The super mutants of the current age. You know, obviously people who like exploring, you know, abandoned places and, you know, haunted rooms. You know, people have been in there and they said that there's the constant sound of cascading water echoing through the complex. Because obviously so many pipes have frozen over and then burst and leaked. So it just sounds like rushing water. And bears wander about the upper floors in spring and hibernate on the lower floors in winter.
That sounds terrifying.
Yeah.
I hate the idea of, like... I mean, I quite like the idea of... done it because I'm a
cowardly,
unadventurous. But I do like the idea, you know, like exploring old buildings, especially like when you've seen somewhere like derelict, you want to know what's in it. Yeah, I used to do stupid shit when I was a kid, like going to like buildings that have been like taped up and were being knocked down just to see what's in them. But as an adult, the fear has firmly established itself in the sensibleness and the whole. No, don't do that.
Okay, I'll watch, you know, sort of POV footage of it on YouTube.
Yes.
And if the end of the video is him getting mauled by a bear, so be it.
Yes, exactly.
Dislike.
But the idea of like in England, you could do it and, you know, you might find some rats or something, but at least you're never going to find
a badger.
He's never going to stumble across an apex predator that's not eaten for like four weeks.
You know, it's one thing to sort of explore it, but just the idea that you bears roaming the floors is something so...
Especially the upper floors. Like, there's something unsetting about bears going upstairs.
It's like going upstairs seeing a cow. How did the cow get there? But it's a cow that can kill you. If you want to know what a bear is, that's my explanation of a bear. Chris, what is a bear? It's like a cow that can kill you. Thank you. Get out of my... What do you mean I didn't get the job as teacher for this place? No. Okay, so that's into my second topic. Chris, why don't you give us our fourth and final one with your second topic?
Okay, so I'm going to talk about statistics, which is...
Fucking yes!
Usually very dull. But I just wanted to talk about something. Basically, it's called spurious correlations. And it's the idea that sometimes you can look at data of two completely unconnected things and draw the wrong conclusion because, you know, you'll see that, like...
There's a correlation but not causation.
Exactly. That's exactly it. So sometimes things... And this is something that, like, you know, news and stuff will always use to try and prove points that they shouldn't really be trying to prove using this data. And sometimes it's a coincidence and sometimes there's an actual, like, third reason. So, you know, like, the number of deaths... number of people who drown in a swimming pool is usually correlated with like the number of ice cream sales. But that's because in summer you're more likely to go swimming in water and drown, and you're more likely to, but there's no actual correlation between drowning and ice cream. So it's that general idea. And I just wanted to show some of the, you know, and obviously the serious ones where people try, like, unemployment rates that have nothing to do with, like, you know, they try and correlate it to policy, government policies that actually have nothing to do with that. But then you got great ones, such as you can see over the last, since 1999 to 2009, the number of people who drowned in a pool was directly correlated with the number of films Nicolas Cage appeared in. So, are they related?
Yes.
Possibly not.
Oh.
As the per capita cheese consumption in the United States has increased, the number of people who died by becoming tangled in their bedsheets also increased, which by itself...
But cheese is going to give you bad dreams.
It is true. What's amazing, though, is that probably more than 700 people a year die from being tangled in their bedsheets.
In the US, though.
In the US, yes.
And how many of them were hammocks? Do they count as bedsheets?
Oh, I don't know. I feel like they are. Yeah, I feel like they should. Are you more likely to die strangled by a hammock, or are you more likely to just fall out and crack your head open? Science. I've done some of the work. I think experiment.
If we're talking about just getting tangled, I think it's easier to tangle yourself in what is essentially ropes.
That is true.
Than bedsheets.
Yes, that is.
Your question, Your Honour. Like, I'm the judge, I don't ask questions.
As less people have been got divorced in Maine, the state of Maine in the United States, the per capita consumption of margarine has also decreased. You can plot them and
use
the right scales. You can see that, like, they've actually decreased. Yeah, I mean, even down to the fact that there was a weird trough in 2005 in both divorces and the amount of margarine people eat.
I mean, it's the classic one was the recession. I don't know, it was pre-recession. People were eating proper butter.
Yeah, that was it.
Those were the good times.
Yeah. So this is, I just want to say, just to give a shout out to TylerVegan.com, which is the website where these wonderful graphs have appeared. The number of letters in the winning word of the Scripps National Spelling Bee correlates with the number of people killed by venomous spiders. So, right. You know, in 2004, the winning word had 13 letters, and the number of deaths peaked at 15 deaths by venomous spiders. Whereas in, say, 2009, there were only 5 deaths by venomous spiders, and the winning word had only 9 letters.
What I'm meant to assume from that is that spiders are enraged
by large, long words. Yeah, exactly.
It's a shame arachnophobic's so long.
Well, that's why they're so mad.
Yeah.
You can even see stuff like percentage of people who wear seatbelts in automobiles and the number of astronauts who've died in spacecraft. And it's literally just because more people died back in the day when in the 60s and 70s when it was more dangerous than they did in the 90s when it became like mandatory.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's just great.
What's interesting about like seatbelt ones is that when it became mandatory and, you know, against the law to not wear one,
mm-hmm.
then there's a huge spike in people going to hospital for neck injuries.
Mm.
You might think because, you know, seatbelts cause neck injuries, but it's because before that they were going to the morgue.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I say some of them are just daft. The results of the Washington Redskins NFL team, how well they do, and then the election of following the election, the president, his incumbent party, does worse when the Redskins lose if there's like an election immediately afterwards.
Right. So
say it's a Republican president and the Redskins lose the next on the weekend before the election. Mm. The Republicans will do worse.
Right. Okay. So we're rooting for the Redskins to not do well.
Yes.
If we're pinning our political colours to the mast. Our blue sails.
Which would make us Tories in England.
Yeah, specifically US-centric.
You say there's funny ones, like Nick Cage. And then there's other ones. It's like you can see that the rate of violent crime has dropped since unleaded petrol was introduced. Yeah, you know, I've seen an argument that maybe it was the lead in petrol was causing people to be aggressive. But then it could just be that, you know, since then, you know, things have generally got better in general. Yeah. Like, in Western countries anyway, like, has there been that effect in other places? Or, you know, is it literally just because
society's got a safer place? Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's weird. No, this isn't quite the sort of causation-correlation thing, but, mm-hmm. you know, the rate of violent crime has gone way down since, say, the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
But the fear of violent crime has gone way up,
mm-hmm.
which is clearly fine.
Yeah.
Not if you're scared all the time, but it shows...
Better to be that way around.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, yeah, yeah. Rather than being blasé about serial killers.
Well, somebody behind you? Nah, probably not.
Don't worry, I'm Buddhist about it, that's why.
And with that, we come to the end of yet another episode of Cooking With Grief. Thank you for coming on this journey with us as we've, well, basically focused on the realm of science this week. Well, dubious science.
Is there any other kind?
Not if I can help it. As always, it's been a pleasure. I hope it's been a pleasure for you as well, Chris.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right, good.
Sure.
And hopefully it's been a pleasure for you, our dear listeners. If you'd like to get in touch, either send us an email to cookingwithgrief@gmail.com or, more likely, hit us up on Twitter @cookingwithgrief. No G on cooking because we ran out of characters. If you enjoyed the show, then please recommend us to a friend, family member, enemy, anybody, randomers on the street.
Animals,
yep. We're trying to get some Dr. Doolittle. It's just called Doolittle, isn't it? The new film that's come out. Yeah, we're trying to get some Doolittle dollar.
Just some sweet sheet bumps.
Yeah. And please, if you would be so kind as to write a review on iTunes, it would massively help the show because it just bumps our numbers up and gets the machine overlords to recognize us.
And speaking of overlords.
We'd also like to thank Big Head Media for looking after us and being our podcast dads.
I just went out to get cigarettes, never came back.
And after this outro, you'll hear a message from one of our co-productions at Big Head, so hopefully you'll enjoy that too. See you next time.
Goodbye.
Bye.
We love you.
Bye.
Oh, hey, I didn't see you there. I'm Swanson, host of the TV Tuners podcast. Every week on TV Tuners, me and my co-host, Kyo Rain.
Swanson, I need water.
And Stairmaster. Review the latest in TV, discuss news, trailers, and even find time to play some fun games. Right now, we're working overtime to cram as much TV knowledge into our brains as possible. Isn't that right, guys?
Swanson, we've been here for 24 hours. We need to get out of here.
Not until you answer who Norm is.
He's Fraser's brother.
Wrong. You get the shock. Check out TV Tunes, available on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, or any of the podcatchers of your choice.